And with a little bit of luck, my new chum Ian is on the phone. Are you there, Ian?
I am indeed.
You are, and I'm sure you are also in sunny Dundee.
Well, you're halfway right. I'm in Dundee, but sunny, well...
No?
No.
No. Oh, well, there we are. We tried, didn't we, really? We tried to give it the big build-up.
It's Tuesday in August we get our sun here.
Tuesday in August? Oh, so I'm really ringing you a month too early. Never mind.
I'm afraid so.
Never mind. Thank you so much for joining me, Ian, this morning to talk about all of the stuff, well, a lot of the stuff that you've got up to over the years. And Candy Jar, our friends on Newport Road in Cardiff, have a series of books which are probably going to reintroduce a lot of people to the characters of The Raccoons, which was a series which was very, very popular a few years ago. And hopefully, of course, now, through the medium of their books and the work by good people like yourself, they're going to become popular all over again.
I think they should, because it's a fabulous series. I've always loved cartoons. I've always loved animation of any sort.
Yeah.
When I was a kid... and people were watching whatever on TV. For me, it was always Tom and Jerry or Roadrunner or Wile E. Coyote or whatever.
Yes,
I loved cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always found something wonderful in the anarchy of that. And even as I got older and I was at work, I'd always make sure I was paying attention to what was on kids' TV because I was working on kids' comics at the time.
Yes, yes.
So when The Raccoons turned up on TV, I was terribly pleased because there was a really nice bit of animation. So back in those days when we had to record things on videos, we may have to tell young people what videos were.
That's
which
true.
Makes me feel terribly, terribly old.
You're not wrong.
Which is fair enough because I am terribly, terribly old.
Mm-hmm.
I would record things like Raccoons and watch it. And I would tell myself I was doing it as research for work. I wasn't. I was doing it because I wanted to watch cartoons.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as you said, it's just complete escapism, isn't it? Because anything can be possible. And if it's done well, it can just be fun for all of the family, not just kids.
The Raccoons, I think, in particular, has a lot going for it. It's fun. It's got good gags. There's jokes. But there's also a really nice undercurrent of environmentalism.
Yes.
Remembering that this was being done more than 30 years ago, I think they were ahead of the curve a bit.
So,
but there's a, please carry on.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, you know, you together with some of the other very, very fine authors have been given the chance now to sort of reimagine them a little bit, bring it up to date, and most importantly, of course, try to once again introduce children to the wonderful world of reading.
Well, I'm very, very lucky. I was brought up in a family that loved reading.
Mm-hmm.
When you went to my grandparents' house, there were my grandmother had a wonderful glass bookcase that had all the Daphne du Maurier books,
and right.
A lot of Scottish classics like Lewis Grassett Gibbons stuff. And she had all of that. But my grandfather collected, there's a comic strip in a newspaper, the Sunday Post, The Bruins and Oor Willie.
Ah, yes, Oor Willie. Yeah, yeah.
I was incredibly lucky that I got to write them much, much later.
Yes.
But they were in my grandfather's side of the collection.
Mm-hmm.
So they had very different tastes, but they were always pushing us to read. And at Christmas, we always got books, and on birthdays, we got books, toys as well, but there were always books pushed
yes,
at us.
Yes, yes.
And I think reading is one of the greatest joys you can give to a child.
Indeed, indeed.
It opens up their imagination. It lets them go into a world that they create when they're reading this book. And I think it's a great thing for empathy too. You know, if you're reading a book, you're seeing someone else's point of view, and
I
think learning to see someone else's point of view is a pretty solid thing to do in the world.
True enough. So, Let's just tell people a little bit about your backstory and the fact that you worked for DC Thompson in Dundee for any number of years, and part of your remit eventually became being the editor of some of the most classic kids' comics of the day.
Yeah, well, when I was 18, my plan was that I was going to go to university and then I was going to take on the world, and the world was my oyster.
Yeah.
And then my mother's jobs ceased to exist and we were a bit skint. So I thought, okay, change of plan. And there was a job advertised at DC Thompson, so I went along. I was interviewed to be a journalist. And I thought, oh, right, that's it. I will be Woodward and I will be Bernstein. I will bring down governments. I will be Clark Kent without the strange costume.
Yeah, yeah.
And as it turned out, they stuck me on the comics and said, be funny. And I went, okay. And I loved it. And I, you know, my plan was that I will stay 2 years and then I'll go away and do amazing things. And I stayed for 30 years.
Wow, wow.
Because I went to work and I got paid to be funny. And I got paid to hang around with who I think were the funniest guys in the world. They were also my friends. They were great writers, incredibly talented people. But they taught me so much. And I was just having a ball every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I started on a comic that nobody remembers called The Hoot. But a year later, I was on The Dandy.
Right.
And I was writing Corky the Cat.
Wow.
Which, and I thought, oh, wow, this is a bit different. This is not what I expected to be doing
with
my life.
Well, not at all. Not at all.
But it's great. And as time went on and I stayed, I went to the Beano, went to the Beezer, and I wound up as deputy editor on The Dandy for 5 years. And then about 2012, I had a stint of about 6 months editing The Beano.
Wow. I mean, they're just such iconic titles, aren't they? And I mean, everybody, I'm sure, who's listening will at some time in their younger days have had copies of those and absolutely pored over all of the cartoon strips in them. And for many kids, I mean, absolutely, that's what they were brought up on.
I think most of us have read comics in our lives. I think they're a wonderful way to get people into reading.
Yes.
A lot of people, a lot of young kids think, oh, reading, it's not cool. But they'll hold a comic and they'll read their way through that.
Mm, mm.
And I think it's your way of opening it up and saying, you know what, you're reading that. You're not just looking at the pictures. You're reading, you're having fun, and it's cool. It's fine. And the great thing is when you're reading something like The Beano, you're reading with your friends, because Dennis the Menace, when he's done properly, is your mate.
Of course,
Minnie the Minx is your mate.
Absolutely, they are. No, that's exactly right. And let's be honest, as we've said now, some of these comics are absolute collector's items too, aren't they? Because they do go back a long way and they do hold that special place in people's hearts. But, you know, as you've just said, it opens the door to reading.
I think the great thing with The Beano is that it's generational. Mums and dads give it to their kids. But they were given it by their mums and dads, who gave it to them from their mums and dads.
Yeah, yeah.
I've done some events where I've spoken to people who read the comics, but you've got like four generations of a family saying, oh, I read it too. And the really depressing thing for me is how many generations they go back that they were reading the stuff I wrote.
That you'd done. Ah, well, that does catch you up, doesn't it? And I mean, yes, it must have been quite a fast turnaround as well, because clearly, I mean, it was a weekly comic, wasn't it? And although I'm sure you were able to work a few weeks in advance, you still had to keep your finger on the buzzer, didn't you?
Well, when I started, we printed 7 weeks in advance, 6 or 7 weeks.
Right.
So your pages went away, and we were printed in Manchester. So we had to get our pages off to the printers in Manchester 6-7 weeks before they went on sale.
Okay.
So you were working on all of those scripts in the intervening weeks as well, and there were like three or four in advance. So you often would have a dozen rattling around your head at a time.
Wow, yeah, that takes a bit of doing.
But we had a guy who was our deputy editor on one of the titles, and he was obsessed with keeping a track of how people were doing with their writing their scripts and keeping them up to date. And he had a huge chart. And we would, and he liked to be the guy who was furthest ahead. So we would make up stories that we'd never written and just fill in the chart.
Oh,
and
that's
he'd sort
mean.
Of look at it and go, oh, no, right. And he'd write another one and write another one and write another one. And he'd be sort of like 6 months in advance. And then we'd just wander up with a rubber and remove the ones we'd written. No, no, sorry. Our mistake. Got that wrong.
That's just mean. That really is mean.
Well, it's a comic. What
but
do
it's
you
a comic, yeah, I suppose so. And I mean, of course, apart from obviously the people doing the writing, it's obviously all the graphic designers too, isn't it?
Well, the artists were fabulous. They still are. I'm still in touch with a lot of them. I left the company 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm still in touch with the artists regularly. I talk to at least one of them every week.
I still
talk to the editorial staff most days, but the artists are great.
Mm.
The great joy is you come up with, this is going to be a brilliant joke, I think this is going to work really well, and you write it and send it off. But the real joy is when it comes back and you see that the artist has done something even better than you'd hoped for.
Right, yes.
And you're like, oh, that is fabulous. That is terrific. There's a guy in your neck of the woods, Carl Dixon, who drew Beryl the Pearl for me for a couple of years. And I used to love what I was going to get from Carl. I knew I was going to get some wonderful lunacy with Beryl and her dad. Because he added things like her dad was wearing a really bad wig.
Mm.
And he had an obsession with money. And you just, you'd see in the background, dad turning round, but his wig doesn't turn round quite quick enough.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So the wig's on sideways now. And it was just lovely little things like that that made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lovely...
Made me laugh.
Yeah, it's lovely collaboration, isn't it, between, you know, two great ideas.
Well, the important thing really is that you have a good relationship between artist and writer.
Yeah.
So I'd always work hard at having a strong relationship with whoever was drawing the pages.
Understood. So let's jump ahead now to the Raccoons, which we've already mentioned, and you've had a chance to do one of the series, and it's called The One That Got Away. So how did the sort of initial connection come with Candy Jar?
Well, I'd written a book for them before called Mind of Stone, which was in their Lethbridge-Stewart Doctor Who spin-off range,
yes.
Which was very different from this.
Okay.
So that was a pretty rough, the Brigadier's in jail and there's gangsters and people are being turned into stone and all that good Doctor Who-style malarkey.
Absolutely.
And Sean, who runs Candy Jar and who is one of the finest people you could ever meet, just called me up and said, do you remember this series? And I did. And he said, well, we're going to do these books. Do you want to do one? And I took about a fraction of a second to beg to do it.
Yes, yeah.
Because I liked the series. I remembered it very well. And I just thought, oh, this will be an interesting thing to do. Also, I've novelised things before. I've novelised radio plays before, and I find novelising an interesting thing to do because you're taking someone else's idea and you're having to put your own stamp on it.
Yes.
So I jumped at the chance, and Sean told me which episode I was going to be dealing with. I started watching that on the recently departed BritBox.
Right.
And thought, okay, I can do that. I can do that fine. And when I sat down to write it, it was just joy.
Mm.
Because I had the script, I had the story. Sean had asked for, you know, can you break it into seven chapters? Can you finish it on a cliffhanger, each one?
Yeah.
And we're going to put jokes and, you know, codes, QR codes in so that they can pick up the songs in it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's all really interesting. And once I got into the story, it's odd that you forget that you're actually novelizing animated characters.
Yeah.
They're just, they're really nicely defined characters. You know who they all are. They've all got a little bit of depth. Actually, they've got more than a little bit of depth. There's some real interesting stuff going on with who they are.
Right, right.
Like, even the villain isn't a completely two-dimensional villain. He adores his son and becomes quite nice when his son's around.
Yes. So
that's a nice touch. And I just had an absolute blast. It only took 2 weeks to write, but it was a joy to do.
So, obviously, the hope will be that the book reading public will take these to their hearts, as they probably did all those years ago when it was a TV series, and that obviously there will be more to come.
I very much hope so, because this was one of the most fun things I've done in my life, and I really enjoy the freedom it gave me.
Yes, yes.
Because I love writing for children. But I haven't done that much of it lately.
No.
And my niece, well, my great niece actually, was sort of poking me with a stick, saying, "Why don't you ever write anything I can read?" Because she'll look at the books I've written. Can I read that? No, no, really, no.
No, you can't read. No, you can't read that. So, I mean,
for goodness sake, please.
Please don't. Yeah, no, no. So, if people want to know a little bit more about what you've done in your life, do you have a website or Facebook pages or WhatsApps or all those sorts of social media things that we need to tell people about?
Well, the two best ones to find me on are ianmclaughlin.com.
Right.
And on Facebook, Ian McLaughlin Writer.
Okay.
Which seems to be quite a blunt title, but it gets the idea across.
And it gets people to find you, doesn't it? That's the thing. Clearly, in the last half an hour of the show, I'll be mentioning all the details of the book again. But clearly, with Candy Jar and with our good friend Sean Russell, you seem to have made a really good connection. And we hope, obviously, Ian, that there's going to be more to come.
Well, I have another book that I've already written for Candy Jar.
Right.
Which is another Doctor Who-oriented one called The Catacombs of Seville.
Right.
Which has UFOs, Franco-Spain, zombies, and slightly dodgy 500-year-old monks.
What more could you ask for, really?
It's an average day at work for me.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? I mean, and that's the point, isn't it? The fantastic, I mean, you can do with a pen.
It's a wonderful thing that, you know, the real world is a very, very nasty place at times.
Mm.
I get to disappear into bizarre worlds that just make me happy.
Yes, yes.
As somebody has pointed out to me quite recently, my entire adult professional life has been spent revisiting all the things I really liked as a kid.
Mm.
Comics, Doctor Who, James Bond, cartoons, Sherlock Holmes, all the stuff I loved as a kid. That's what I do for a living now.
And in a sense, Ian, what a privilege it is, isn't it?
I am incredibly lucky. I am possibly the luckiest man in the world. I've never had to grow up.
No. Isn't that great? Isn't that, it's a lovely thing to be able to say, isn't it, sometimes, or people say it of themselves, that, really, no, I've never grown up. And everybody can smile and think, oh, gosh, I wish I was in his or her shoes.
Well, I don't think they'd want to be in the shoes I'm wearing just now, because they are quite awful. And
right, okay.
But I'm aware of how incredibly fortunate I am to be doing what I'm doing and to have done it for such a long time. It's next year will be 40 years I've been doing this.
Well, marvellous.
And
stuff.
I wear every year of it on my face.
Brilliant. Well, that's the way to do it. Well, look, Ian, inevitably, time has caught up with us, and I need to sort of bring this to a little bit of a close for today. But I do hope we'll get the chance to talk again, maybe in a month or two's time or something, because clearly you've got so many stories that you could tell our lovely listeners. But we do obviously wish you all the best with this book